Merkel Media.
Lashback Fridays here at Macroaggressions. We're going all the way back to April 22nd, 2020, episode number 15, Who Has the Power? If you're interested in converting some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency, or maybe even your retirement savings, into physical gold and silver, you can go to our website, www.macroaggressions.gold, and Tony over at Wise Wolf Gold and Silver will hook you up. Now, please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Frazita!
Swangled in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Hello, everybody. My name is Charlie Robinson. Thanks for tuning into the show. I know you have a lot of options out there. I appreciate you taking the time to check it out. Information about the show and about me can be found at my website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can check out my Facebook page, /theoctopusofglobalcontrol. And you can follow me on Twitter, at Moefus, M-O-W-E-F-U-S. This episode is going to be about power, and it comes in all shapes and sizes. If you live in the United States, you're constantly told that we're the most powerful nation on earth and that we must use this power wisely, but that's really not the case. I mean, we really don't use the power wisely, at least in terms of our government. The military adventurism, we tend to use our power in the most despicable ways. And you know, if you've read my book, one of the components of it is the format, and that is that I bring in quotes from over 500 different people that had a role in these important events in our history, or they have an interesting take in them. And I also bring in quotes from people that have written books, you know, so I've got some George Orwell quotes in there. And if we're going to talk about power, we have to start with an excerpt from Orwell's book 1984, because he summed it up in a way that was, you know, that even though it was written in 1948, it still applies, you know, 70 years later. So let's start with this. Now, I will tell you the answer to my question. It is this: the party seeks power entirely for its own sake. We are not interested in the good of others. We are interested solely in power, pure power. What pure power means, you will understand presently. We are different from the oligarchies of the past in that we know what we are doing. All the others, even those who resembled ourselves, were cowards and hypocrites. The German Nazis and the Russian communists came very close to us in their methods, but they never had the courage to recognize their own motives. They pretended, perhaps even believed, that they had seized power unwillingly and for a limited time, and that just around the corner there lay a paradise where human beings would be free and equal. We are not like that. We know that no one ever seizes power with the intention of relinquishing it. Power is not a means, it's an end. One does not establish a dictatorship in order to safeguard a revolution. One makes the revolution in order to establish the dictatorship. The object of persecution is persecution. The object of torture is torture. The object of power is power. Now you begin to understand me. Well, we talked earlier about the term deep state and how, you know, it's really become kind of a well-known term culturally, you know, over the last, I don't know, 5 years or so. Seems like people know about it, and that's a good thing, of course. But, you know, whenever a term kind of makes its way into the general lexicon, then it tends to get hijacked and watered down, and next thing you know, everybody's a deep state asset, and, you know, they're pointing fingers at each other. But you want to, you know, who is the deep state? It's a little hard to define because they don't hand out membership cards, and you can make some assumptions, and they're, you know, and you can get close to it. But in terms of cataloging everybody that is technically a member of it, it'd be difficult. But I think Doug Casey, financial analyst, who I quoted in the book, does a pretty good job of trying to paint a picture of who is a member of this club that has no official membership. And so he put it like this: the deep state has a life of its own, like the government itself. It's composed of top echelon employees of a dozen Praetorian agencies like the FBI, CIA, and NSA, top generals, admirals, and other military operatives, long-term congressmen, senators, and directors of important regulatory agencies. But deep state's much broader than just the government. It includes the heads of major corporations, all of whom are heavily involved in selling to the state and enabling it. That absolutely includes Silicon Valley, although those guys at least have a sense of humor, evidenced by their "don't be evil" motto. It also includes all the top people in the Fed, all the heads of all the major banks, brokers, and insurers. Add the presidents and many professors at top universities, which act as deep state recruiting centers, all the top media figures, of course, and many regulars at things like Bohemian Grove and the Council on Foreign Relations. They epitomize the status quo, held together by money, power, and propaganda. So that's a good place to start, at least, right? You can add in some other people, but if you were to take a look at the role of Bohemian Grove, CFR, heads of banks, heads of the Fed, yeah, that's a good place to start. You know, those guys are all part of it. And, you know, it's kind of like the deep state is sort of like a hybrid of national security and law enforcement agencies. It's got a little the Department of Defense in there, Department of State, Department of Homeland Security, the CIA, Justice Department are all part of it. You know, all those agencies that are designed to look out for our best interest, yeah, they're part of it. They're not looking out for our best interest. They're looking out for their best interest. That's why they've been put in these positions of power. One of the things that you need to realize, and I think most people do after a certain while of looking into these topics, is that a lot of people that are in positions of power, they don't make it up the corporate ladder because they're doing a really good job of getting their sales numbers up, and Bob in accounting is just kicking ass, and he's going to get this promotion, and next thing you know, he's going to be CEO. It doesn't really work like that. The people that get put into these positions of power, CFOs, CEOs, you know, COOs of these major corporations, these really important corporations, they're put there by people that are a part of this deep state. they sit on board of governors of each other's companies. They call it interlocking board of governor rosters, where one guy from Walmart, the CEO of Walmart, might sit on the board of directors for General Electric and, you know, ExxonMobil and, you know, Google and places like that. And then the heads of Google might sit on the board of General Electric as well. And so, you know, they sort of spread them out. They do this so that they connect the dots in this spider web of corporations. And they, and when you really dig into the history of these corporations and who controls them and you know, the major ones that are really pulling the strings, either in terms of power or their revenue, what you find is that there's only like about 150 of them or so that control a little over 65% of all of the resources and market cap of the stock market. It's not, you know, there's thousands of publicly traded companies, but in terms of the ones that are really pulling the weight, it's only a few hundred of them, 150 to depending on how far up you want to go. And it's incestuous. They're all sort of connected to one another. And some of the most powerful companies in the world have names that you've never heard of. You know, it's like, you know, something something NA / limited, you know, out of the Cayman Islands or someplace. And you're like, oh, what is that? I don't even know what they sell. Well, it's a company made up of, you know, it's a holding company made up of other companies that you might have heard of, and it's just the parent company. And they kind of like that. So you've got some corporations that spend a lot of money on advertising dollars so that you know their name, so that you are, they're a household name, they're a brand name that you recognize. And then you have other corporations that make a ton of money and they have zero interest in you knowing who they are or even thinking about them. And those are, of course, the ones that you need to watch out for, because if nobody knows who they are and nobody cares about them, then they are not on everybody's radar. Everybody knows who Monsanto is, and I bet Monsanto wishes that they had gone that route of trying to be, you know, sort of a nameless organization. But it's kind of hard to do that when you're simultaneously poisoning half of the world. So when you talk about deep state, it's good to get a quote from the guy that coined the phrase deep state, Peter Dale Scott. He's an author. He says it refers to a parallel secret government organized by the intelligence and security apparatus, financed by drugs, and engaging in illicit violence to protect the status and interest of the military against threats from intellectuals, religious groups, and occasionally the constitutional government. In this book, meaning his book called Road to 9/11, in this book I adapt the term somewhat to refer to the wider interface in America between the public, the constitutionally established state, and the deep forces behind it of wealth, power, and violence outside the government. You might call it the back door of the public state, giving access to dark forces outside the law. So just because the intelligence agencies of the United States are involved with the deep state does not mean that this is limited to being an American organization. Yes, there are important people from the United States government and American-based businesses involved in this, but the organization is global, both in composition and reach. So their goals may align with some policies of the United States, but not always. And their loyalties do not have, they're not constrained by sovereign boundaries. They're globalists, like they're internationalists, as Rockefeller calls themselves. So they're interested in taking over the world. When the plan is world government, then you can click up within your own country to establish control. But that's not the finish line. The finish line is to then take that country and merge them with other countries. So one of the things that you see with like the EU, the European Union, and the reason why England left through Brexit and why that is a good thing, in my opinion, is that the path to world government starts with grouping up countries into bigger chunks. And the EU is a prime example of that. They take 33 or 32, I'm not sure how many countries together that form the EU. And then they run the EU out of Brussels, and they don't have to control the heads of 32 different countries then. They just have to control the head of the EU, which is easy to do because they created this concept. They created the EU. This is a globalist organization. And so what you do is you group up together countries into one batch and put a leader in charge of that batch. And then you only have to control one person instead of 30 plus people. So that's how it works. And Aaron Russo, who is a director, he talked about a concept called Amero, right? That was the blending of Canada, America, and Mexico, and into one country, that they were going to have a one currency for all of that. And that's the goal. That's what they would like to do. So when you hear about the EU and you wonder, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? It's a bad thing because anytime you put that many countries under one umbrella, then you lose identity. Each of those countries, they lost their currency. It just became, they all switched to the euro, except for England. They kept the pound. But, you switch to a one currency, you take orders from a bunch of bureaucrats in Brussels that have no understanding or no loyalty towards your country. If you're in the UK, you gave up your fishing rights and under a totally sketchy deal where back in the 70s when the EEC was being formed, the precursor to the EU, you had Ted Heath, the Prime Minister, giving up all of England's fishing, well, not all of them, but I think they had 77% of the fishing rights in and around the islands of in the United Kingdom. And once they joined that EEC, they wound up giving up their rights. It went down to about 22%. So they gave about 50% of the rights to this consortium of countries, the precursor to the EU. And everyone in the UK was like, well, what is this guy doing? Why would he do that? What a dumb idea. There has to be some explanation for that. And the explanation that came out decades later was that Ted Heath was a notorious pedophile who was being blackmailed by the Germans, and he gave up those rights due to leverage provided by the, forced on him by the Germans, who had videos and had information that Ted Heath was raping young boys, murdering them on his yacht, and then having his butler or whoever throw him overboard. So, when you're doing shit like that and a foreign government finds out about it, they're going to use it. They're going to leverage you. And so that's what happens. And so that's yet another reason why you kind of want to not group up country by country into these larger blocks, because something always gets lost in the translation. You lose your identity. You lose your sovereignty, obviously. You lose your currency. You lose what it is that makes your country special. And you give that up in order to join a much bigger group. And then they say, well, this group will be able to, we'll have more power when it comes to trade, and we'll have, we'll be able to protect ourselves, kind of like NATO does. And we'll be able to, click up and, like you do if you go to jail, you got to click up to save your ass, right? Because if you're out there all by yourself, you're prey for the wolves that are watching you. And so they sort of sell this to governments as well, and say that you got to, it's in your best interest to group up like that. So expect that moving forward. Expect to hear more of that. Expect to hear that in disjointed countries and continents like Africa. You could definitely see them doing an African Union. where they take all of these smaller countries and try to put them together. It's a weird thing because on the one hand, you've got the groups, the globalist groups trying to look into put together these smaller countries and form one big voting bloc, a big EU, so to speak. And you could see them wanting to do that in Africa. But then on the flip side to that, you also have in the Middle East, you have Saudi Arabia and Israel actively trying to break apart bigger countries like Iraq and Iran and Syria into smaller pieces. And they do that because they actually see those bigger countries like Iraq, Iran, and Syria as threats to them, meaning Saudi Arabia and Israel. And so therefore, they want those countries broken up into smaller pieces that are a little bit more disjointed so that they don't have the power or the resources to mount any sort of threat against them. So it just sort of depends where you are regionally, and it depends on how violent that region is. I would say Europe is typically not very violent towards each other. I mean, obviously, we've got World War II and World War I to talk about. But I mean, currently, there's not, you know, Belgium's not looking to invade France, you know, so that's not really happening. So you can group those up together. But in the Middle East, it's sort of a different story. And that, of course, is a different story because they're being provoked. It's not so much that Iran is out invading other countries. They haven't invaded another country in 400 years. They've defended themselves when Iraq attacked them, but they haven't invaded anybody else. But according to Israel, then Iran is liable to attack everybody and launch nuclear missiles unprovoked at any minute just because they feel like it. So a lot of that is obviously just propaganda and lies. But this consolidation of power is something that they're always looking for. They're always looking to group up countries and use that power then as leverage to keep other people in line, to protect themselves, maybe to threaten other countries, maybe to pry other countries out of their current state and add them to the group. We saw that with the breakup of the Soviet Union and the expansion of NATO. And when the Soviet Union was intact, NATO had an agreement that they would not expand even an inch eastward towards the Soviet Union. So as soon as that fell apart, as soon as the Soviet Union fell apart, then almost immediately NATO started picking off some of these satellite countries that had been let go by Russia when they realized that they could no longer keep this union together. So groups like NATO is a pretty good example of a consolidation of power. NATO is unnecessary. It's a globalist organization. It is a source of death and destruction worldwide under the guise of protecting democracy and standing up for our rights and making sure that nobody attacks. Nobody's attacking NATO, but NATO sure as hell is attacking other people. But of course, they do that while waving the banner of humanitarian aid. So there's always that big lie to disguise the power. The power's there. The power structure is operating, but they don't want you to think of them as a power structure. They want you to think of them as a force for good. That's why when you watch the advertisements in the United States for the Marine Corps, it's like a force for good, for good, everybody. Don't worry about us. We're spreading democracy. We're a force for good. We're coming to save you with bombs and missiles. And if you don't do what we say, we're gonna spread some democracy right down your throat and blow up this village. And then we're gonna hit you with drone strikes. And then an hour later, once the ambulances arrive, we'll hit them again because we're interested in spreading democracy and also humanitarian aid. So. Here comes the bomb filled with pencils and crayons and coloring books for the kids, right? But if you really wanted to sum up an organization like NATO, what their mission is, you know, what their tagline would be, and you were talking about truth in advertising, their tagline would be order out of chaos, because that's what they do. That is the strategy that the globalists use for taking over countries. They destabilize them. They create chaos, and then they impose their order out of chaos. So you've got to have chaos first. Now, if you've got natural chaos, you've got countries fighting each other for some reason, then you can go in there and try and establish your order after that chaos has taken place. But what we've learned is that the people that are in charge of plotting this world government, although they do take a long-term approach to these things, and they are patient to an extent, they're not willing to sit by and just wait for conflict to break out. They will instigate conflict themselves, and they do that covertly through guys like George Soros, who goes in and destabilizes governments through these color revolutions and finances oppositions to people that are currently in power. And they'll fund their opponent, and if that doesn't work, then they'll convince the United States or the United Nations to slap sanctions on a country in order to choke them off economically. And if that doesn't work, they will assassinate the current leader and put their own puppet in there. You see this happening in Venezuela. You see this happening in Brazil. This is like CIA 101. This is what they do. So they create order out of chaos. And we were talking a little bit earlier about Aaron Russo and how he was a filmmaker. He was also close with the Rockefellers, and he had an interesting quote talking about a conversation that he had with his friend Nick Rockefeller. And so Aaron Russo says, I used to say to him, what's the point of all this? You have all the money in the world you need. You have all the power you need. What's the point? What's the end goal? To which Rockefeller replied, the end goal is to get everybody chipped, to control the whole society, to have the bankers and the elite people control the world. Now, you know, you can take that quote for what it's worth, right? Did Nick Rockefeller say that? Probably. You know, Aaron Russo did a great job. He's no longer with us, but he did a great job. He did a documentary called Freedom to Fascism. It's worth watching. It's very well done. And, you know, this is the mentality of these people. Yeah, I know that Order Out of Chaos sounds like the name of like a really shitty punk rock band, but this is their mentality. This is kind of what their... This is how they think. We as rational people would never contemplate going in and wrecking the place just so that we could establish it in our you know image, to rebuild it in our image. But they do. They have no problem doing that. They don't. You know, when you're empathy deficient, You don't worry. You're not trying to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. You're not saying, geez, you know, really sucks that Yemen had, you know, millions of people die of starvation. This seems like something that maybe we shouldn't do. They don't think like that. They don't give a damn about that. They see that as the ends justify the means, and we are going to get to this one world government, you know, however we have to. And it's probably going to involve violence, but they'll take it however they can get it. There's no line that they won't cross. We have lines in our lives that we won't cross. But when you're psychopathic, those lines tend to disappear if they were ever there to begin with. But, you know, the concept behind the order out of chaos motto is that when the current social or political structure is blasted into disarray, it provides a logical reason, as well as a legitimate cover story, to rebuild the society in a way that better suits their desires. So they have the solution all ready to go the moment that the chaos breaks out. And the solution is never what the population wants. It's always what they need because of all this damn chaos that they've been experiencing lately, you know, brought on by the globalists that have created it. It usually consists of more restrictive laws and policies to impose on the public, but it's spun in a way that makes it kind of sound like a benefit to the people and not really a removal of the rights and freedoms, which of course it always is. So, you know, it's take like an idea that might have seemed a bit too crazy to even be considered years earlier might end up sounding like a very feasible plan, because scared people are bad decision makers, and they tend to outsource the thinking to someone else so that they, you know, don't have to get involved. So this plays right into the hands of the controllers, and, you know, and they're more than willing to think on our behalf. We're guilty of outsourcing our critical thinking to these maniacs. And then we act surprised when things don't go our way. Well, we have to take a bigger role. We have to be more responsible for holding up our end of the bargain in this. And that is that we can't allow them to do the thinking for us. I know it's hard. I know thinking's difficult, you know, but we have to say, no. We're more than capable of planning how we want our society to function. We don't need you. No, thank you. If you want to outsource some of your work or just need specialized help with a project that you're working on, you need to check out Fiverr. They have a network of thousands of freelance experts in business, graphics and design, programming and tech, digital marketing, music and audio, video and animation, writing and translation, and so much more. Need someone to build out a website or help to grow your current business with a digital marketing campaign? You can find thousands of people ready to get to work on your project at a fixed price that you set at Fiverr. And your payment is only released to the freelancer once you're pleased and approve the work you get. If you have questions, you can reach out to Fiverr 24/7. Just click the link in the description box and start putting this army of freelancers to work for you. The tech giants make a fortune selling your personal information to all kinds of outlets for them to use as they please. Delete Me removes your personal information like name, address, age, phone number, email address, and photos of your home from leading data broker sites. Removing personal information from data broker websites reduces your online footprint and removes Google search results. These guys really understand opt-out and privacy policy, so you don't have to spend your time focusing on things like legal jargon. Delete Me has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, NPR, and CNET. With over 20 million personal listings removed, Delete Me is the most trusted and proven privacy solution available, so check them out by using the link in the description to see just how they can take back your personal information. We are living through a very strange time, filled with an unbelievable amount of uncertainty. We don't know what the world will look like weeks from now, let alone months from now. If you find yourself in a financial emergency and in need of money right away, you at least have an option with cashadvance.com. You can submit your request online and receive an answer in minutes so that you will know where you stand and what programs they have available for you. Their online service is entirely free and works to find potential lenders in their network, so just fill out the secure online form and see which option works the best for your needs. Look, I hope that you don't need this service, but if you do, during this crazy time in our lives, at least you know that you have another option with cashadvance.com. Click the link in the description box to see what they have to offer. One of the guys that I've read a lot of his work over the years, listened to a ton of his interviews, is a guy named John Rappaport. And you know the term fake news? Well, John Rappaport's website is nomorefakenews.com, I think. And he's had it for 20 years. So let's go ahead and give him credit for the fake news comment. But anyway, he says this: the planet is being controlled to an alarming extent by elites, or as I call them, cartels. There are many cartels, but seven are the most powerful. They evolve, they learn from one another, they both compete and cooperate. Unfortunately, the trend is more towards cooperation. These seven cartels represent the following areas: government, military, intelligence, energy, money, media, and medical. I came to this map of cartels through my own research on the medical monopoly. That's where it started in 1986. Once you understand these cartel elites, you can begin to separate out information into loose layers of importance, as in, which layer of the control game are we talking about? Because it's all about layers. And at most layers, the players are forwarding agendas which they do not realize fit into higher and more destructive agendas. So this is interesting because in my book, The Octopus of Global Control, I talk about the eight tentacles, and John Rappaport talks about seven cartels. And of his seven cartels, I got all of them. and I didn't mean to. I mean, I didn't mean to copy it. I think you sort of come to category. I have an extra one, so I'm better. No, I'm just kidding. But what you notice is that they create these silos, organized by, like he did it, government, military, intelligence, and you think that they're independent of one another, but what you realize is that they all are tied together. You know, they're all tied together. And how are they tied together? They're tied together, you know, through order out of chaos. They're tied together by the deep state, this octopus that is controlling everything. And so it's important to realize that, like he said, yes, they compete against each other on some levels, but there's also a disproportionate amount of cooperation that goes on. And that is, as he said, it's alarming because these people, you would love to have them fighting against one another. And that's what they do to us. They're constantly dividing us down. They're dividing us into Republicans and Democrats and rich and poor and black and white and trans and, you know, whatever. You know, if there's a way to divide people down into smaller and smaller groups, they'll find a way to do it. You want to divide people down into 97 different genders? Well, that's a good way to do it. Then you can have them fighting against each other. So this is sort of a strategy that they use. And John Rappaport talks about that, how they compete, but most of the time they cooperate with one another. They're kind of like crime families a little bit, you know, where you've got the five families, the five Italian mob families, and they've got their own turf and they're working their hustles inside that turf. And every now and then somebody crosses over. But before you whack that guy, you got to go talk to the head of that family and say, hey, listen, I got to whack your guy because he's doing this. And then they say, okay, that's fine. But if you don't clear it through them, then you can start a war between all. There is a sense of, and this might sound weird, but there's a sense of honor amongst thieves here. They understand that they're better off working together than fighting one another, because to fight one another does a couple things. First of all, it weakens their power, and secondly, it draws attention to the fight. From time to time, though, there's going to be situations where you just can't help it. You can't help it have a conflict with another department. But this is essentially like being part of a big corporation that has accounting on the seventh floor, and then it has sales guys on the eighth floor, and you know, you're all part of the same team, but there's a little bit of competition, and they're sort of broken down into groups and segments. And so that is a kind of part of how this deep state runs. So it's compartmentalized in one sense, where sometimes the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing, and that is for their own best interest. But at the top, then the head of the organization kind of sees how all these pieces fit together. For us, as the sort of common people on the outside, we're just now starting to understand the organizational structure of this operation. And it's not to say, by the way, that we have it all figured out, because we do not. But we're learning more and more about it, and what we have come to understand, without question, is that there is no limit to what they will do. There is no limit to how they will use their power, influence, deception, their media assets to kick off wars, even that will, of course, translate into trillions of dollars spent, millions of lives lost, and they don't even think twice about it. And one of the guys, there's a video out that you can find on social media or, you know, YouTube or whatever your video platform of choice is. And it's, I'm going to read the text of it. I'm going to read what the guy says. But if you really want to get yourself fired up, I mean, really pissed off, go find the video, type in Patrick Clausen, Iran, false flag, or something along those lines. And you will pull up a video of a guy who is giving away the game. He's explaining how it works. Now, I'm going to read it, and it's a couple paragraphs long, but it's worth it because this is a dude who stood up in front of an audience of people. He's an Israeli lobbyist. He's a reprehensible human being, one of the worst people that I have ever come across in this. Honest about what a scumbag he is, but a scumbag nonetheless, and it goes like this. I frankly find that crisis initiation is really tough, and it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us into war with Iran, which leads me to conclude that if in fact compromise is not coming, that the traditional way that America gets into war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II, as David mentioned. You may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people think Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall he had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Some people might think that Mr. Johnson wanted to send troops to Vietnam. You may recall we had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. We didn't go to war with Spain until the USS Maine exploded. And I may point out that Mr. Lincoln did not feel he could call out the federal army until Fort Sumter was attacked, which is why he ordered the commander at Fort Sumter to do the exact thing which the South Carolinians had said would cause an attack. So, if in fact the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if somebody else started the war. One can combine other means of pressure with sanctions. I mentioned that explosion on August 17th. We could step up the pressure. I mean, look, people, Iranian submarines periodically go down. Someday, one of them might not come up. Who would know why? We could do a variety of things if we wish to increase the pressure. I'm not advocating this, but I'm just suggesting that this is not an either-or proposition. You know, it's just sanctions has to succeed or it's other things. We are in the game of using covert means against the Iranians. We could get nastier at that. In a sea of psychopathic warmongers in Washington, D.C., this guy has separated himself from the pack. I mean, there is not a guy more deserving of a pie in the face than this prick. Mind you, he won't be going to war with Iran. He'll make sure your kids do the fighting for him and come home with their brains all scrambled, no pension, and a six-month wait to get into a VA hospital to get their PTSD medication so that maybe the nightmares will stop. This fucking guy wants you to fight Iran because he's an Israeli lobbyist who has a hard-on for war against Iran. And what he's telling you is that we need to start a war with Iran based on a false flag because Iran isn't going to start a war with us. This is an interesting and fascinating peek into the mind of a psychopath. And that's who Patrick Clausen is. He is a certified lunatic. You know, but is he going to do the fighting? Nope. Is Israel going to do the fighting, who he works for? Nope. You know, it'll be the United States, of course, because that's how he wants it. And look, I'm not the only one that pointed this out. So Kevin Barrett, who is an author, Dr. Kevin Barrett, I should say, he has been very vocal in the fight against Israel. He said this: Patrick Clausen of that leading Israeli-sponsored Jewish Policy Institute has told us that we need a false flag event, a fake attack blamed on Iran to launch a war on Iran. He openly says that. You can watch him say it in a video. The neoconservatives have openly admitted why they are doing what they are doing. They follow the Trotskyan philosophy of governance through big lies and mass violence. And they believe they are elite that have the right, even the duty, to manipulate the minds of the public by creating fake terror evidence in order to achieve their agenda. They called for a new Pearl Harbor 1 year before 9/11, and they got it. They have not even hidden their trail. It's kind of disgusting that other scholars haven't picked up on this. Yeah. You know, this is what the powerful do. And this is how they think. When they want to kick off a war with a foreign country, and that country has no interest in starting a war back with them, they find covert ways to do that. Now, this is when what Patrick Claussen's talking about with Iranian submarines is an idea for a future event. But you don't need to speculate about false flags. You can look at plenty of examples of them. You can look at 9/11, which was a false flag attack. You can look at what he was talking about in his speech. The Gulf of Tonkin was a false flag event. Never happened. There was no North Vietnamese boat. You talk about the sinking of the Lusitania. Same thing. False flag. Pearl Harbor. Allowed to happen. Don't check your history books because it's not in there. Check alternative history books, and you will see that the United States had advanced knowledge that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor, and they allowed it to happen because they needed that to happen as the pretext to join for the World War II. If that's the first time you're hearing that, I'm sorry to ruin the illusion that you have of World War II, but that is in fact what happened that allowed this to kick off. So what he's discussing is not, he's clearly not inventing the concept of false flags. He's just openly asking for it. He's calling for it. He's saying this is what we need to do. It's alarming, and it's dangerous, of course. And you almost don't want to talk about it, because to talk about it is to acknowledge that there are actually people out there that think like this. But it would be worse if we pretended like a guy like Patrick Claussen doesn't exist, when in actuality he does, because we need to be aware that these are real possibilities. And as you know, moving forward, we have seen hostilities between the United States and Iran. It's important when you look at that moving, you know, from this point forward, if this is the first time you've heard about what Patrick Claussen was talking about, if you now examine future Iranian attacks, and I use that term in air quotes, you will understand that before you're so quick to assume that Iran actually attacked the United States, just make sure you watch that video first, because there might be a little bit more to it than what the media is telling you about. So when you're talking about the deep state, and when you're talking about power, then what you wind up finding are there's organizations. You know, we mentioned how the EU is a consortium of countries that are grouped together. Well, there's organizations inside the United States which are collections of very powerful individuals grouped together. And you have them like the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderberg Group and the Trilateral Commission and, you know, Bohemian Grove and places like that. Council on Foreign Relations is an interesting one. Their mission is to create a monopoly for their members through foreign policy planning. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's not the mission statement on their website, but that is what they do. That is what they are working to do. And over time, the CFR has been intertwined with government that carry out their policy prescription, you know, in part because many of their members go back and forth between the CFR and U.S. governments, to the point where virtually entire administrations are pieced together from members of the CFR. They're like a a gang, or, you know, like a gang that controls politicians through money and influence. And it's been this way for decades. And if you think I'm off my rocker on this one, just listen to what world-class psychopath Hillary Clinton had to say about the CFR. She says, "I'm delighted to be here in this new headquarters. I have been often to the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so it will mean I don't have to go far to go be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future." So if you're graduating college and you want to, you know, get into politics, you're studying how government works, and you want to make a career out of working in Washington, D.C., there are two versions of politics. You know, there's what you learn in school about the way Washington works, and then there's real politics. There's the real way that it works. Real politics is run by the banks and organizations like the CFR, with methods such as threats, murder, blackmail, extortion, and even war. So you don't rise in the world of politics without a firm, very deep understanding of the way things are. Now, you can cling to some outdated belief that the rule of law is a guiding light and the American way, and but you need to get that out of your head, because that's window dressing. That's what you're sold by the media about how it works. That is not how it works. Watch House of Cards. that's more in line with how politics really operates. But don't take my word for it. And don't take the creators of that show's word for it. How about, this is from Representative John Rarick. He's a Democrat from the state of Louisiana, and he's talking about the CFR. He said, "The CFR is dedicated to one world government, financed by a number of the largest tax-exempt foundations, i.e. the Rockefellers, and wielding such power and influence over our lives in the areas of finance, business, labor, military, education, and mass communications media, that it should be familiar to every American concerned with good government and with preserving and defending the U.S. Constitution and our free enterprise system. Yet the nation's right-to-know machinery, the news media, usually so aggressive in exposures to inform our people, remains silent when it comes to the CFR, its members, and their activity. The CFR is the establishment. Not only does it have influence and power in key decision-making positions at the highest levels of government to apply pressure from above, but it also finances and uses individuals and groups to bring pressure from below to justify the high-level decisions for converting the U.S. from a sovereign republic into a servile member of a one-world dictatorship." Now, that guy's in the House of Representatives, and he said that. Maybe we should listen to him. I mean, I'm not really in favor of listening to politicians. But when one goes against the grain like that and outs this obvious globalist organization, you know, maybe we should listen to this guy. And not for nothing, because the CFR has produced 19 secretaries of state, 21 Treasury secretaries, 23 defense secretaries, and 16 CIA directors. So this is the incubator for power. This is where power comes from. It's one of the places. It's not the only place, of course, but it is certainly one of the places. Obama's cabinet was stuffed with CFR members. John Kerry, Secretary of State, Jack Lew, the Treasury Secretary, Ashton Carter, the Secretary of Defense, Jay Johnson, who's the head of Homeland Security. These guys are all CFR members. Even if you just go back one administration before that, the W. Bush administration, Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Tim Geithner, Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld, Richard Perle, Scooter Libby, and Richard Armitage, all CFR members. So it's the minor leagues of power. And then they get drafted into the major leagues in these Obama administrations and W administrations and Trump administrations. They pull them out of the CFR. They take the, it's like an all-star team from there, and they load up their administration with it. An interesting topic quote I'm going to read. This is from Harper's, the magazine Harper's, and I'm going to read it. Then I'm going to tell you the date on it at the end, and you'll be surprised. The most powerful clique in these CFR groups have one objective in common. They want to bring about the surrender of the sovereignty and the national independence of the United States. They want to end national boundaries and racial and ethnic loyalties, supposedly to increase business and ensure world peace. What they strive for would inevitably lead to dictatorship and loss of freedoms by the people. The CFR was founded for, quote, the purpose of promoting disarmament and submergence of U.S. sovereignty and national independence into an all-powerful one-world government. So that's Harper's Magazine. That's from 1958. So you remember, maybe we don't remember 1958, but you remember when magazines and newspapers and the media tried to tell you the truth? Well, it's been a while, but here you go. That's what they're talking about. They're talking about how the power structure likes to disguise what they're doing. The Council on Foreign Relations pretends to be something that they're not, when in actuality, what they're pushing towards is one world dictatorship, a new world order. So, it's dangerous. And it's not just the CFR. You've got the Bilderberg Group. Bilderberg Group gets a lot of people are starting to kind of wake up to that. This is a very secretive organization. And in 2015, in Austria, the 63rd Bilderberg Conference took place, and there were 140 people from 22 different countries that were invited, and they were, pretty diverse groups. So you have political leaders, you have experts from like finance industries and academia and the media and all these different categories. But the topics that they discussed, keep in mind, 2015, when they're discussing this, what they're doing when they have these meetings is they're planning what the future is going to look like in five years or so. They're working to push that. So if we look at 2015 and we move forward 5 years to 2020, then let's see if what they were talking about 5 years ago is relevant to what we're experiencing right now. These were the key topics discussed at Bilderberg: artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, chemical weapons, European strategy, globalization, Iran, Middle East, NATO, Russia, terrorism, United States presidential selection. I don't know. Maybe not the United States presidential selection. They were talking about the United States president. I added the selection part. But you know they're selecting it, right? I mean, you know that's kind of how it works. You can go vote all you want, man, but vote harder next time. Maybe you'll get the result you want. It's all controlled, of course. This conference, which was founded in 1954 by David Rockefeller, of course. You know what I mean? Whenever David Rockefeller is involved, you know it's a bad operation. But that's what they do. They have this, 2/3 of the participants come from Europe and North America. About 1/3 are from like political and governmental, and the rest are from other fields. So science and technology. That's where you get guys like Eric Schmidt showing up from Alphabet. Formerly of Alphabet, now working at the Pentagon. So you get the tech giants showing up there, the bankers, and new people that are sort of on their way to becoming president. You know, guys like Bill Clinton before he was president would show up there. Obama made trips to Bilderberg before that. So this is it's a conference. They just talk about it as just being discussions facing how we're gonna. how we're going to help the world progress from here on out. You see, the thing that they have in common, all these people have in common, is that they think that they're saving the world. They think that they're taking lead on these issues, and that we should thank them and praise them and throw roses at their feet for doing all this. But they're not going to release the minutes from the meeting, of course. You know, let's not get carried away. They're not going to actually, there's not going to be any transparency there. It's just going to be, we're coming to make the hard choices that have to be made in order to move our society forward. Now, what their vision of moving society forward and our vision of how we want society to move forward are very different, of course. They see us as useless eaters, as Henry Kissinger once described people. And so they have no respect for us, and they treat us as such. So we have to be careful when we talk about these agendas, when they talk about Davos. Hey, everybody got together in Davos in January so that they could discuss, you know, what we're going to do moving forward. No. They got together in Davos to figure out how they can fuck the rest of us. That's what's going on there. Okay. Let's not get this twisted at all, because they're not there to try and solve the world's problems. They're creating the world's problems. The solving it is how the media spins it, but that's not really going on. They're networking there to figure out how they can make money, keep the power they currently have, consolidate even more power into their grip, all without us figuring out what's going on. And, you know, to be fair, they've done a pretty good job of it, because the vast majority of people on this planet have no idea who's in control, how they got there, what the plan is, and how it will impact them. But if you start to pick away at these control structures, what you'll find is that a lot of these groups sell the public there's a public-facing version and a very private face. Remember when Hillary Clinton says, "Well, I forget exactly what she said. You got to have a public opinion and a private opinion," was essentially what she was saying. Basically, you have to tell the public one thing and you have to do something differently behind closed doors. And that, of course, is what's happening there. Another component of this is the Trilateral Commission. So they really focus more on banking, and a lot of it is Europe, North America, and Asia. They don't really do too much with Africa or South America. But Barry Goldwater said, "The Trilateral Commission is intended to be the vehicle for multinational consolidation of the commercial and banking interests by seizing control of the political government of the United States. The Trilateral Commission represents a skillful, coordinated effort to seize control and consolidate the four centers of power: political, monetary, intellectual, and ecclesiastical. What the Trilateral Commission intends is to create a worldwide economic power superior to the political governments of the nation states involved. As managers and creators of the system, they will rule the future." So, once again, this is how power is manufactured and controlled, by these organizations that get together. Trilateral Commission. I feel like I'm repeating myself, probably because I am. Founded by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski, and used to control the world. And if you had a fantasy football league, but instead of drafting football players, you had to field a team of psychopathic mass murderers, you'd draft David Rockefeller number one overall, and you probably could pick up Zbigniew Brzezinski in the second round. I mean, maybe he'd last the second round. So these guys are really at the top, both dead now, of course. But this is who you would These are the boogeymen. You know how we talk about the boogeyman in the shadows controlling the world or anything? They're not even really in the shadows that much anymore because a lot of them have outed themselves. The Rockefeller family, Brzezinski, Kissinger, the Bushes, the Clintons. These guys are the boogeyman that you hear about. The people in the shadows controlling the world. These are some of them. It's not to say that they're the only ones, and there are others. There are still some in the shadows, but for the most part, you've got anybody that's high ranking at the Trilateral Commission, the CFR, and Bilderberg. You can go ahead and put them in your psychopathic mass murderer fantasy football league. You could draft them. I personally would draft Henry Kissinger, probably number two overall. I'd start him at running back, I think. He's a big guy. He's a big fat guy. I might start him at offensive line, but I'm not sure. Bohemian Grove, we talked about that earlier. That's a organization that is, you know, kind of it's a little different. That's more of like a party scene. In fact, Richard Nixon not Mr. Politically Correct by any means, said this about Bohemian Grove. The Bohemian Grove, which I attended from time to time, is the most faggy goddamn thing you could ever imagine with that San Francisco crowd. So, you know, there's that. And I'm sure there's a lot of assless chaps going on at Bohemian Grove. They certainly do hold the ceremonial burning of Moloch, the owl god. And, you know, it's kind of like a highbrow Klan rally, you know, except instead of burning crosses, they're burning owls. But probably not the mailing list you want to be on, I would imagine. But I'll end it with a quote from somebody that knew a thing or two about propaganda and power, and that is Edward Bernays. He wrote a book. He wrote the book on it, literally wrote the book called Propaganda. And he said, "There are invisible rulers who control the destinies of millions. It is not generally realized to what extent the words and actions of our most influential public men are dictated by shrewd persons operating behind the scenes." That's it, man. That's power for you. The real power is behind the scenes through these organizations, through these secret societies. You watch Eyes Wide Shut, you think that's just a fictional movie. There's a lot of truth to those secret ceremonies. There's a lot of nonsense going on, whether it's skull and bones or Illuminati rituals or whatever. By the way, fun fact, that scene in Eyes Wide Shut with all the people dressed in masks, that was filmed at the Rothschild's castle. Kind of appropriate. If you want to find out more about my book, you can go to theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. There's a place there you can contact me, send me messages, tell me that you like the podcast, tell me that you hate the podcast, share it with your friends, do whatever you can, because God knows this is not going to get promoted by the algorithms. So it's up to you to spread the information. Take care, everybody.